Is asking questions about Earth the best way to appreciate nature's beauty?
What are ways we as humans can work towards a more sustainable future?
Is it still better to have a generalized view of the world in regards to science?
What can geology tell us about where humanity is headed, and what are the main priorities for geologists today?
Hi everyone, welcome back to Highly Inspired. I'm Ella.
And I'm Jordan.
Hey guys, we're so excited that you're here this week. We have a super exciting topic and we're excited.
A new territory for us.
Yeah, not used to talking about science, not usually my realm of expertise.
Not that we're experts by any means.
Yeah, I'm not an expert at anything, so that's kind of the whole point of this, but yeah.
We have two guests on this week to talk about the field of geology, which is their expertise. They are renowned geologists with master's degrees based in the Southwest of the United States. And we just had a bunch of questions relating to sustainable energy, climate change, Earth, where it's heading, how we as humans kind of fit into the whole picture. And they had some really interesting knowledge for us. Honestly, it was kind of more of a lecture.
Yeah, I was just blown away. I mean, I'm just taking in so much information. At the end of it, I was like, wow, I feel like I lost 10 IQ points. Because I was like, I thought I was a lot smarter than I was.
No, I wasn't. Yeah, I lost a little bit of confidence there too. But we tried to keep up on the lingo. And I mean, yeah, when you're talking to people who dedicate their entire lives to studying a certain topic, yeah, they know everything surrounding it. So,
Jordan, do you want to talk about the guests that we had on for the show?
Yeah, so we hosted Troy Tittlemeyer and Matt Scipione from PBE Podcast.
Also known as Skippo.
Skippo, Skips. PBE Podcast stands for Permian Basin Experience, and they started this to basically discuss geology-related subjects with other knowledgeable guests or other geologists that they work with. And that's kind of how we became connected with them, just solely through the podcasting world. And they thought that our scope of wanting to bring in different and unique topics to our podcast was something that was really interesting. So that's kind of how it all came to fruition. And Troy is also the CEO at Magma Chem Research Institute in Arizona, which hits home for us.
Yes, our home state, the
roots.
Desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he was close by.
Yeah, we hope you guys enjoy this episode. Yeah, I think there's a lot to learn about it. Yeah.
Definitely. All right, thank you guys. Thanks for potting with us.
But we also worked with them all the time, and business folks had a different game. They were playing a different game. It wasn't necessarily about actually making discoveries, right? It was about moving money and making money. And that oil and gas industry is wild and a crazy history. And so when I saw the technical stuff really getting pushed to the side and it was kind of just like a novel piece of the industry, I'm like, man, this is not going to go well because we're not getting better. We're not investing in getting better. We're not investing in being on the front lines of science and challenging old ideas. It was just kind of a fun and games for the people that were in the industry. And that wasn't important to me. I didn't care about the money. I wanted to actually do something and make a difference. And so I had the opportunity to help start this research institute in Arizona. And I quit. I sold everything. My wife was behind me and we did this together and took everything we had and moved here to start this research institute, which has now led us into the metals business, which is where we're at now. So for me, awesome. I work as a geologist to find resources for people with money that want to de-risk that money and make sure that they make more with it. I do that for profit. And then the nonprofit is delivering this message of new science and delivering this message it's 40 years behind, honestly. And so that's exciting to be a part of telling this story. And so that's where I'm at. And Skips is, as he was saying, I was kind of paving the road, I guess, and putting myself out there and getting it out there. And Skips was noticing like, damn, this dude's going out there and doing whatever. He's going out there. He's doing these things. It looks exciting. Yeah. He continuously followed up and was way better.
Skip wow. Good for you.
Always elevates. And so now what we're trying to do is get the funding in place, get everything in place where Skips can come back again. The AA team gets together and we continue to do what we've been doing since we met. That's just
Awesome.
Trying to figure out what this geology is.
No, that's awesome. I'm really glad that we got kind of that little intro about you guys. I think when I was listening to your guys' first episode, episode zero, it was super interesting. The industry of oil and gas has been kind of at this like stopping point because they're not really bringing geologists into the conversation. I don't know, which I thought was really interesting. So that's cool that you're breaking out and doing your own thing. And
And you've definitely made a risk, I guess, kind of going for it and caring more about the actual work as opposed to just the money behind it. I think that's huge.
Yeah. So both of us, well, Troy first moved out there. And then once I graduated, I followed him out there. And
you just keep following.
I just kept following him.
Must be a good leader.
I'm the best follower around. And what happened was, the company that Troy worked for, I happened to get a job there too. And that's, we kind of continued working. And then meanwhile, I was getting my master's and Troy was getting his master's simultaneously. So we were doing that 7 to 5 and then we were doing night classes and we were just trying to knock out as much work as we could really and get as much experience as we could. But yeah, Troy kind of got the writing on the wall a little earlier than I did. He left the company that we worked for about a month and a half right before the company ended up going under.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was, and we all saw the writing on the wall, but you know, I had a little bit more hope that somehow we could manage to get our way out. And there, it was just the money guys decided, no, this is, it's more of, we're just going to leverage this thing out. We're just going to try to, you know, get what we can for it instead of trying to build up these assets. And it was unfortunate because I, in my opinion, we were sitting on something that was potentially something very special, but you know, and in reality, I think moving away from oil was the best thing either of us could have done. Right now, I'm working for the government and I'm helping Troy out in the meantime with the research institute, things that I can do. But yeah, it's just as geologists, you need to see where the writing on the wall is. And now that needle has shifted for us from where we see our future is not in oil. We see it in the resource industry, whether it's precious metals, copper, lithium.
Arizona's the right place for that.
Totally. Okay. Wait, if you don't mind me asking, when you say I work for the government now, would you be able to elaborate on that? Or is that more confidential?
Is this recording? No, I'm just kidding.
Is this is recording.
I mean, I guess what I could say is, yeah, we're just doing resource evaluation for the government in offshore California.
Okay.
So that's awesome. that's all I can really say.
Yeah,
but,
fair.
It was a door that happened to open as one closed. So it was a good transition.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Now for our everyday kind of average listener that we have, I mean, my education in geology doesn't really surpass more than like my sixth grade chapter on it,
rocks.
On rocks. What would you guys, you know, how would you simplify geology as a study in the best way that you can? Just so our listeners kind of have a base of what you guys study and kind of the work that you do.
Skip, I'll go for it.
Oh man, I have the best summary for this, but yeah, I'll make it work. So essentially what we do as geologists is we take all the work done by physicists, chemists, biologists, things that are done in these black box labs. And we take those lessons and we apply them to the natural world, right? So we take those processes that are defined by physicist, chemist, and we say, hey, in these rocks, we see similar processes, right? So that's all we're doing is we're just more or less observational scientists. And we try to find these patterns in the earth using, you know, the tools of giants, scientists that came before us. And we're just more or less copy pasting.
Okay.
Copy pasting. Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. The natural world. I mean, yeah, obviously there's science behind everything. And I think that earth as a as what it is, I mean, there's just so much to uncover. So yes, that's awesome. Something that I have kind of learned through my geology studies recently. So I spoke
what
to
geology studies recently.
I have done some background research. Okay?
Okay.
So there's obviously so many subfields like paleontology, volcanology, seismology, whatever. There's definitely a lot of categories. How would you guys describe your niche, or are you more overarching into several different fields? Do most geologists focus on one, or how does that typically work?
That's now you're talking about the academia system. And in my opinion, what's wrong with it over the past 40, 60 years, especially in geology, it was all about specialization. So all of a sudden you get through, you get into a geology course and your professor specifically is a PhD, meaning very, very specifically, they studied fossils. And that's Dr. Ritterbusch for me and Skips. She was a paleontologist. That's what she knew. She knew everything to a degree, but it was a paleontology. She can look at a fossil and start thinking, okay, what was the oxygen conditions? What was potentially the environment of this thing? So the academia drove and truly segregated. And that's why we have the problem we have today in the overall scheme of geology. But everybody got really specialized and became these experts in one specific thing. And what that, the problem with that is that they created these islands of specialization, and these oceans in between these islands were never sailed. Literally, they just, no, there's no degree that's like, hey, this is an integrated geology degree.
Yeah.
Where you were sailing the seas of all these interdisciplinary things, and it didn't happen, and it's still not happening, and because it's specialization, because that's where funding comes. You're a Mars, you're like a not an astronomer, but you know, you're studying the other planets, right? You're a planetary geologist, and you're specialized in that. So that's where your money comes from. NASA is going around going, who's specializing in Mars or in planetary science? Oh, it's this program. Bang. And then all this money comes in because you're a specialist. And now you're just pounding all the students underneath you, trying to learn everything. You're just pounding in what you know. And so academia has destroyed, in a sense, has destroyed our ability to actually be a fully integrated geologist. And so that's where industry comes in, and that's where Research Institute comes in. And that's where, you know, really challenging your own curiosity and your intellectual limits personally, allowing you to sail those seas and find those anomalies between these disciplines. That's the only way it's going to happen. And that, to me, is the future of academia.
I am so happy you just, both Jordan and yourself, you just said that, because, I mean, the purpose of our podcast is generalism. Like, our slogan is, you know, explore ideas, be a generalist. That is the whole reason why we did this podcast. And that's why we talk about so many ideas, and people have given us advice on our podcast. They're like, oh, you need to be more niche or whatever, and kind of applying it to what you're saying about the science stuff. Yeah. Like, I felt like that in school, even from a business perspective. Everyone's so in their own bubble in any sort of industry. And you build connections and conclusions in those kind of gaps that you're talking about with the oceans in between the islands, you know?
Well, it's easy for people to wrap their heads around, oh, that person specializes in this field or in this one field of work. However, I do think that the world is moving towards a direction where the most valuable people are the people who have knowledge in a wide variety of areas and then can tie all that knowledge together to ultimately, I guess, just, be more generalized in for geology. I think that that's perfect. So it's more, the valuable geologists that you guys work with have more knowledge across all of these other subfields. So it's kind of like pulling it all together to then look at everything from like a bigger picture, higher angle type of perspective.
Right. Yeah. And I think something that also is interesting that you brought up is I was listening to this biologist, Brett Weinstein, on Joe Rogan. He was talking about the same issue that you were talking about, where in the last like 50, 60 years of academia, the funding, especially in like the STEM and in science fields, like that is pretty much where which programs get more attention and kind of almost limits discovery, because there's so much, I don't know, he explained it better, but I think it's interesting that you brought that up.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, when you're looking at a problem through a specific mic, like a microscope, right?
Yeah.
And you're neglecting all these other ways to approach that problem or to create this model, you're going to be incorrect.
Yeah.
Right? 100% of the time, you're going to be wrong. And the only way you can get closer to the right answer is if you expand that pool of knowledge, right? So if you, like Troy was saying, if you specialize in paleontology, I mean, when you're looking at a totally different problem, you're not going to more or less use the knowledge from this field in order to reflect your interpretation, right? And you're going to be even more wrong. It, like, to kind of tie to what you guys do on the finance side, I mean, when you create a portfolio, right, you're not investing solely in tech, you're not investing solely in energy. You want diversification, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same exact, well, not the same exact thing, but it's similar idea.
Yeah, for the most part. Sure.
and similar problems. Geologists are, like, ironically the worst when it comes to trying to integrate with other geologists. I mean,
really? Terrible.
Yeah. We watch it daily. I mean, you go to an outcrop and you're like, what the, you got 10 geologists and 15 different ideas. And you're just like, what the fuck, what is going on? There's a solution here. There is problems. There's anomalies. Let's address the anomalies to make discoveries. What the, and they go, no, the anomaly is there, but we throw that out so we can keep telling you what we think it is. And eventually everyone just starts nodding at the end of that presentation. Oh, you're gosh. Like, okay.
I mean, so they're just very close-minded.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Wow. Okay. Amazing. Well, you debunked the question that I had, but even better because it kind of falls more in line with us. And I think that, I have even more respect for you guys that you think that way and are going to continue having that mindset as understanding everything as opposed to one thing. If I could ask though, what aspects of geology or the work that you guys do right now interests you the most or that you are the most passionate about?
Skip. Oh,
okay. I'll hop in. So for me, it's structural geology because for Troy and myself, our PhD, when we were an undergrad, he was a structural geologist and mm-hmm. he learned under arguably the greatest structural geologist of all time, Bill Dickinson over at Stanford. He was the one that basically pushed the idea of plate tectonics into the millennium or like into geology as mm-hmm. we know it today. And for us, especially in the industries that we've worked in oil and in the mineral industry, structure drives everything. So everything as far as different veins, different mineral deposits, mm-hmm. understanding what these different faults are doing through time is how we can de-risk an asset. So that's the value that we want to add. And from there, for us, that's where both of us realized, hey, it's not just structure. There is a ton of other shit that we don't know about. Excuse my language. Yeah. I don't know, I'm allowed to cuss. But there's a ton of other stuff we don't know about. And that's why we need to take a step back and take in this big picture because we've missed a lot of stuff in our career. And it's because we've had that narrow scope in the beginning. But now mm-hmm. that we're taking that step back, you know, that at the end of the day, de-risking an asset is our goal, right? Okay. We want to hit the target 100% of the time. And mm-hmm. the only way to do that mm-hmm. is to take that step back.
Yeah. In 2020, I feel like there's so many different things. I mean, there's always things that we're trying to solve, but I feel like in the modern world right now, I mean, we're kind of in an economic crisis and it's interesting because I think precious metals and cash kind of have this inverse relationship. Another thing that people are concerned about is global warming and then obviously the pandemic. So I was just curious, like, what do you think is kind of the biggest threat or interest and kind of the what areas do you think geology can like provide solutions to any of those problems?
Oh man.
Yeah, we do. We have so many more under that scope, but.
Wow. So just to back up just a second. Yeah. Phenomenal question. And exactly where we are today.
Yeah.
And how geology fits in this whole thing.
Yeah.
To back up just a second, you're talking about geology as a whole and what gets us exciting. What's exciting about geology, and Skips was kind of hinting about this, is that we apply the fundamentals of science built by the legends of Newton and everybody else. We apply those fundamentals to the natural world. And when you do that, nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
You're like, what is going on? So we make all these interpretations about what it is. Geology is incredibly young. Geology, applying the science to the natural world and actually trying to make predictions of economic value is incredibly young and incredibly challenging. So mm-hmm. that's exactly where we have hope in the future of what we're doing. Geology is fundamentally going through a revolution right now, mm-hmm. without question. Everything we thought is being completely re-questioned with brand new sets of data for the first time integrated around the planet, not just in one specific area.
Yep.
We now have global data. We now can look at the whole planet, lay it out, and come up with the plate tectonic equator. That's what I'm tracing right here. That's a crack. That is a big crack that goes around the whole planet. And what's happening is the planet is wrenching like this through geologic time. And that's because we're traversing the galactic plane of the Milky Way every 15 million years.
Okay.
So we have this crazy physical...
Bring it back.
You gotta stay with me.
I'm staying with you.
I am so engaged. It's insane.
It's like better than any classroom.
It's happening. And this is an empirical data set. This is where every geologist can stand and say, okay, is this a plate tectonic equator? Is this real? And you go, okay, why is it real? Everything north of the plate tectonic equator, all those big fractures that you're seeing in this map are moving in similar directions, and everything south of it is in an opposite direction. Again, that's this wrenching. And every time the planet's wrenching, we see it in the geologic rock record. So we can see it through because we can age date this stuff. We know we're looking at 4 billion year old rock. We know we're looking at 100,000 year old rock. With age dating, that's a fourth dimension. That's what's completely opened this whole thing up. We have geochemistry, which means the things we can't see, like the germs on your hand, you can't see them, but geochemistry will tell you exactly what the germs are under a microscope. Same concept with geology. We have the ability to see things that we never saw before and in context with time. Now you have the tool like structural geology, and it's totally freaking predictable. That's why the research institute is so exciting. This is 40 years of research that's totally behind business. Business is ran off just old broken ideas, and they're coming up with the good enough story to get investments and to make mistakes and to try to make it a win. We're done with that bullshit. That is all pre-COVID. Post-COVID is about making real predictions that are absolutely valuable. Everyone wins. There's enough room for everyone. There's no competition. Geology is back.
It's back. That's so exciting. This is an exciting time for you guys. And obviously the pandemic has been horrible for a lot of people this year. But for your field, how do you think that COVID has highlighted things, and what discoveries have come out of just this year for geology specifically?
Well, for me, I think definitely COVID is forcing us to slow down in this generation. And I'll be the first one to say it. I react first and then start reading. And it's just the mindset I have. And that's how I grew up. And so it's reactive. And instead of being reactive, I think we're now forced into a position where we are now saying, okay, hold on. I can be active in my actions, and I can think before something happens. And that is, to me, the most exciting thing that COVID's bringing, is it's slowing everyone down from taking action, thinking about it, and now let's go do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like more mindful decision-making, for sure.
Yeah. Something that, I think what you just said, COVID kind of has slowed us all down. And then something I kind of picked up too from listening to one of your episodes is that I liked that you said the goal of your podcast was that you wanted to get people to kind of question their pre-existing conclusions and either sit with that and realize that, you know, they're correct, or have them question it and adjust it. And I feel like right now, especially with climate change, for example, I at least as someone who's not in the scientific world, I feel like on the news I'm hearing so many different
conflicting
things, and as an average person I'm like, okay, what's happening? What should I actually be concerned about? What are the doable solutions? Are some of those solutions that are getting presented too big too fast, or are they are we able to do it, and that kind of thing?
I think that's just a very, very, like, climate change itself is a very, very loaded topic. And that's something that I think for Troy and I, we're very skeptical of a lot of the models that have come out as far as how they model this CO2 emissions, because your inputs in the very beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on what those inputs are, they're not going to cover everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And on the geology side, we know the biggest inputs to CO2 emissions, and it's more methane, mm-hmm. if anything, is from deep sea vents and volcanics. Right. And being able to quantify how much CO2 has been pumped into the atmosphere from those two sources alone is almost impossible. So understanding the rate at which these things are happening is, in my opinion, I just don't know. I haven't seen a model to date that I trust, but I know for a fact we are coming out of an ice age. So we're not going to stop the polar ice caps from melting. That train's already been, like, is on the tracks and it is going. Mm-hmm. So Troy, what did you want to add?
Well, it's an incredible challenge to understand the concept of geologic time. And that's where geologists are all, that's why we're skeptical, because we know the planet's been doing its thing for so long. And we can see it in the geologic rock record that, yes, CO2 has been climbing at the rate it's climbing. It's been more, it's been less. It's doing its thing through geologic time. And so I hate to say it, but it's built and designed and pushed forward for a business reasons. It's economic to make such a drastic change in the human population from hydrocarbon to something like electrical vehicles. There's so much opportunity. There's so much of a void there for business to come in and put money and build something that's new. Is it cleaner? Yeah, there's less CO2 at the end product of this thing. Getting to that is going to be insane. And there's going to be a ton of mistakes if we don't slow down.
Interesting.
Because what's actually happening on this planet, totally justified. This is South America right here. There's this huge crack that runs like this. That thing is putting off an insane amount of heat. It's heating the oceans, literally. It's equivalent to saying like 5 atomic bombs are going off every second in the ocean.
Wow.
5 atomic bombs are going off in the oceans every second. And that's an incredible amount of energy, incredible amount of heat. And we can debate if it's that much or less. The bottom line is the planet has been doing this thing forever. And we don't, in the models, we never talk about the mantle. We never talk about the fact that we live on a freaking sun. The core of our earth is a sun. It's incredible heat, incredible energy, incredible power. And no one wants to put that in their models. Everyone wants to talk about how humans, let's think about it, in the whole planet, how humans are causing this catastrophic event that the planet is actually feeling. It's getting hurt by us. But the COVID, it answered the problem. COVID shut us all down in about 2 weeks. Emissions were completely clean. The earth cleaned us off this thing
in 2 weeks. In China. Yeah, it was like the ozone layer of
it completely evaporated. And same with LA. Like you could see in a couple days, the smog went away from LA and it was so much clearer.
Yeah, I'm glad that you guys. Insignificant. I know it's sad. I think in our heads, we want to think that we're so much bigger than we are. And it's kind of the human effect. But I think that's really good you bring that up, because that was kind of my natural suspicion, was that obviously, yes, like humans do have a role in this, but to what extent and what's the weight of that? And I feel like these models, like you said, I totally agree that they aren't putting all the inputs in there that are also from just the natural occurrences that are happening with the earth.
Yeah.
And I also think something that is kind of interesting when you're talking about things moving so fast and us kind of making decisions so fast without thinking through all the science and the economic risks and rewards, is in California right now, we're experiencing these power outages, which I don't know if you guys have seen this, but basically because California has been trying to move less, be more energy efficient and more green, now they're having a shortage with how hot everything is and everyone running their AC in California. And we have like every Monday we have to have the power off for a few hours unexpectedly. It's crazy.
This is the first year that they've done that. I don't fully know. I don't know when that will stop, but going back to kind of what you were saying about just looking at, so what you just said about like Earth having an inner sun at its core, obviously the Earth is so massive. The concept of climate change is everywhere, but it's become so politicized. And I feel like when you see these articles and when you see all this information and data and you don't know how to analyze that, like us two as average people who are exposed to the most recent news and the headlines that come out, I think a good reason why we want to have you guys on is because this is what you do. This is what you study, and you don't just understand the updates. You understand the why and you understand the past. And yeah, like the ice age coming out of an ice age, which is why the ice caps are melting. I just think, when you actually look at this from a science perspective, it can get rid of the politics around it. And I wish that we could have this conversation about these types of issues without it being so politicized and kind of stigmatized. So I'm glad that, we're kind of going this angle more.
Mm-hmm. Thank you guys. We don't really have a voice. So you guys have the bigger voice. Get out there.
I mean, change the world.
Let the people know.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you guys have your podcast. Is that why you ended up starting it?
Yeah. Why'd you guys start the podcast?
Skippa.
I mean, it just it started back in Midland. This was something I did love about being in the heart of oil and gas, is the geology community was extremely tight knit. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't think it, but most geologists that work in oil and gas have very, very similar personalities. So we get along very, very well. And every weekend, you know, someone would be having a barbecue or, you know, we'd be going to a happy hour, grabbing drinks together. And it were just conversations. These were conversations that we'd have just all the time. And it just turned into one day, Troy and I said, hey, why don't we just, start a podcast and start recording these things.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then it just grew from there. And we were just, all we were really doing was bringing on all of our friends. That's all it really was. And luckily all of our friends had major roles in these huge companies. So, you know, people took notice.
We weren't just whistling. It was good stuff.
Yeah. When your friends that you would have on, would you kind of just talk about the stuff that you'd be working on, or did you ever set any specific, like, oh, this episode, we're going to debunk this or that? How was that set up?
Yeah, it was a lot of back and forth. Mm-hmm. Your email, what do you want to talk about? They would always ask us, what do you guys want us to talk about? We're like, all right, let's think of something, Skip-o. And then we'd be like, what about this? And they'd be like, I don't really want to touch that, but I'll talk about that. And then bang, they would put in the work and put a presentation together and make the show for us. It was huge to have that support. It means the world, and it's still there. It's just, man, everyone's so struggling in the oil and gas industry that it's wild times right now. It's fun to talk about, but you know, we need to put food on the table.
Definitely. Why do you think so many people are struggling right now?
Well, because they're the
economy. Well, obviously. Yeah. Well, is it from a geology standpoint too, aside from the pandemic?
So for this is kind of where, like, the crux with oil is, right? Your job security, depending on what company you're at, is not based on your performance. Your job security is based on the market price of oil. And so that's kind of the terrifying thing. So at the start of, right before COVID, there was this big kind of flooding of the market between Saudi Arabia and Russia. And oil in the Permian dropped from $60 a barrel all the way to $25 a barrel, which was the lowest it's been in 4 years.
Yeah.
And then after that, COVID hit, and then oil went from $25 a barrel to negative 45 one day. Wow. If you could believe that. Yeah.
First
time in history. I mean, there was probably a good month period where oil was single digits per barrel. And, you know, companies just don't make money at those margins. So what do? You know, they lay off employees. Yeah. And it's an unfortunate thing because a lot of good people did get laid off in that time period. But yeah. It's just kind of a nature of the beast. Everyone's aware of it. It's just something that just kind of like lurks over your shoulder. You just don't know what's going to happen.
It really went from 100 to zero.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. I have family members in the industry, and it definitely hit home in person, like personal. And I knew people that also lost their jobs in that. And, you know, it's definitely, like you said, it's an industry where you could be the best at your job, but if the demand isn't there,
There's nothing you can do about it. Have you seen some increase in hope recently in the last couple months or since that happened?
Oh, yeah.
Where is it looking now? Or what are your guys' predictions for going forward or 2021?
Stay connected to Magma Chemical Research Institute.
Okay.
We got a lot to say.
Not a shameless plug.
We got a lot to say.
No, go for it.
The more plugs, the better.
I think right now it's an interesting transition because for the first time in a very long time, for at least on the geology side, there's kind of this, not only is oil kind of a huge demand for energy, but now we have this like increase in lithium ion technology. So now for geologists, lithium is something that they're potentially exploring for. And so I think the opportunities have, It's crazy. When you look at the forecasting for lithium in the next 10 years, there is a lot of demand that's going to need to be figured out.
Yeah. Wow.
And so that's one pathway. And then as well as oil isn't going away. Oil is,
the
infrastructure's there. Yeah. It's so ingrained in just, you know, humanity that it's not going away anytime soon. And definitely companies are making adjustments, I know, in the Permian in order to deal with either lower prices or, you know, lower demand. So that there's always going to be a need, but, you know, companies are just going to have to evolve. Mm-hmm. That's all it is.
And stay up with the trends. Okay, awesome. Well, then that's good to hear. Hopefully that won't happen again where it goes in the negatives. That sounds awful. In terms of, I guess, I do want to transition a little bit because I guess probably the most amount of like geology knowledge that I have is mining, because I've been working with an investment kind of manager who works for, he is a geologist based in South Africa, and I've been talking to him a lot about the gold trends right now. And I've learned a lot. I'm still continuing to learn, but obviously because the economy has taken a hit this year, and gold is kind of always a hedge against economic downturns. Yeah. What do you guys predict in terms of the economy and how that affects like people investing in gold, investing in these mines, investing in precious metal mining? Is that something that people should be doing? Or
So just a little clarification. Are you talking about investing in the actual like bullion itself, so gold itself, or like the ETF, or what is it, ETF, or like the actual companies, or potentially futures? Like, what are you actually looking into investing? Or are you just talking about gold and like a very broad?
No, not like the substance gold. Not, I'm talking more like the mines and the companies, the sites that actually do it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's just a company to company thing, right? Just like any industry, you just need to do your research on, you know, what exactly the company's done in the past and, you know, what prospects they actually have in their projections, moving forward. But there's like most industries.
What about from more like a high level perspective, just like the mineral itself and kind of just going forward? And I feel like a lot of people are just talking about whether it's an ETF or like actually buying gold. Like, I feel like I keep hearing ads about that.
Yeah, you're right.
Based on your philosophy. It's based on your philosophy. What do you believe is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen to the US dollar?
Dollar's
going to
go
years?
Down, guys.
Yeah. So you're a Republican, I see. No, just kidding. But that is I think it's a conservative mindset. It's a conservative philosophy. It could be true. It could be true. Nobody does. The United States economy has never been pressured like it is right now. Can it withstand this? Can it be such a good built and stable economy that it actually can weather this storm? And if that's true, then what's going to happen with gold? Gold, and specifically, that's a funky thing through history. It is a controllable thing. Don't think that this is something that's new to the game. These people that are in it and understand it, they know that it buys and sells. You bump it 20% and you sell the hell out of that thing. You put your money in, bump it, sell. Put your money in, bump it, sell. It's controllable. It's predictable. Now, it's the fear of COVID. So now you're messing with this fear game that's controlling this price and the longevity of this price. If you think this is going to actually happen for 10 years, we're about to see an incredible gold market and a bull market. It's going to be amazing. But if COVID's gone in two, you better hope you invested in something that's near surface and they can get to production right away.
Interesting.
If you're investing in a project and they're like, the gold's at 3,000 feet and we're going to build all these shafts and this billions of dollars are going into actually just getting to it, that's a risky deal in my opinion.
Yeah.
So it totally depends on the length of this economic downturn that we're already kind of seeing right now, whether it's 2 years or 10 years. Yeah, that's a huge difference for sure.
Yeah. And like Troy was saying, right, is it easily accessible or is this something that's like a 10-year plan? Because unlike oil, where you can put a well in the ground within less than 2 months from conception to actual like exploitation, with gold, or any kind of mining, not just gold, whether it's lithium, nickel, cobalt, silver, copper, it's like a 4 to 5 year process, right? Because you're dealing with EPA, you got to get people out there on site to figure out, hey, like we have all of these like endangered species here. We have, you know, specific plants that either need to be removed and taken somewhere else or that you can't even touch. So it's a very, very slow process when it comes to gold. And there are a lot of companies right now that are, you know, they're staking these claims and they're buying things up. But it's like you said, it's in five years, what are you forecasting for gold? In 10 years, what are you forecasting for gold? And and that's really, really what it comes down to. But like you said, it's a safety net. You're never going to lose your ass on gold, but you're never going to make a ton of money with gold.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
When it gets around 20%, sell.
Okay. Okay. It's a good rule.
I'm writing that down. Actually. 20%.
Are you actually?
Yes.
Now the other thing with, what's interesting with this whole thing and thinking about the whole globe and how we're really becoming an integrative society and working towards a universal language and universal thoughts for the first time in human history. When you look at the whole planet and you think of energy and growth, that's when actually money's being made. That's when we all can get to work and we all have good, meaningful lives is when there's growth. Right now, I don't see a lot of talk of growth. We're not building all new kind of cities. We're not expanding housing contracts like crazy. In my opinion, we're waiting for the planet to engage with 100% sustainable energy. So everybody on the planet gets 24 hours, 7 days a week, lights, refrigeration, blah, 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 everything that comes with that. And with that, I think we're going to see this incredible growth, and that is going to be in copper. And the things that are in building the city, it's growth of buildings and the cities and pipelines and all that stuff. Copper is going to be amazing when growth becomes back into the conversation.
So why is copper? I mean, I have no idea.
Why is copper so desirable now
or for the future?
Used in everything. Yeah. It's used in everything. You got to build a car with copper. You got to build houses with copper. You got to build infrastructure with copper. Copper's in everything.
Okay.
It's a great stable metal.
So do you think you're talking from a global perspective, eventually, you know, the next huge growth period will be when everything's on renewable energy. That's probably going to happen faster here in the U.S. or more developed countries before it hits third world countries? Or do you think it's kind of happening at the same time or I don't know.
Yeah.
I suggest that countries that don't have a good infrastructure, taking USA out, Europe out, all these countries that have good quality infrastructure that's already built, don't take all this money and time switching and all that stuff. Go to the other countries that don't have anything yet and focus and those renewables, that technology.
Yeah, have them even just skip it. Just something. Whole step of the industrial revolution that we already went through. Like, just have them go straight from what they have now to renewables. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. When you say renewables, you're talking solar, geothermal, wind.
All that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Hydrocarbon is also renewable technically. So just throwing it out there.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
How does that work that it's renewable? I don't know.
Skip.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. We're pestering you guys with so many questions. No, I'm just learning so much.
Fantastic question.
I feel like you're better suited for answering this one.
We'll take LA for example, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
LA is actually called the LA Basin. And back in the day, there was oil derricks everywhere. You couldn't see streets. Everyone was drilling for oil.
Wow.
That's because it is an active hydrocarbon generating system that is there. It's under tension. And when you're under tension in the crust, you have a lot of fluids and you have oceanic water. You have this process called hydrogenation. It's making oil as we breathe. The planet is doing this all over the place. LA Basin is just a really interesting one to use as an example. There are warehouses built. Sorry, there are warehouses with pump jacks trying to pump this stuff out. If we don't, it's going to be leaking out of the rocks.
Mm-hmm. So just to kind of put it in perspective, the LA Basin has produced more oil per acre than any other basin on the planet. So we're talking about Guar in Saudi Arabia. We're talking the Permian Basin where we used to work. We're talking offshore Brazil. We're talking about the West Coast of Africa. The LA Basin per acre has produced more oil than any other basin on the planet. And from our older models, we should have pumped that thing off back in the 80s. And to this day, there are still wells that are flowing at 40,000 barrels of oil a day. Coming out of the
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Times that by 43. That's 42 gallons per barrel. 40,000 barrels times 42. That's a lot of gasoline. That's a lot of.
I don't even know what that would look like.
I can't. Yeah.
I can't wrap my head around that.
It sounds like a screaming banshee. We'll put it that way. But yeah, if you're driving through downtown LA and you see like this weird rundown warehouse and you're like, I wonder what's going on here.
That's
like you got all these nice buildings around it. There's probably a pump jack behind there, just been going for the last 60, 70 years, just pumping down oil. So that's kind of one of the big things that Troy and I were figuring out is we're like, hey, we're producing way more oil than theoretically we should be capable. This planet should be capable of producing. So that's where we took a step back, and especially Troy working at the Research Institute now is doing a lot of really good stuff in regards to that side of things. But Yeah.
People definitely don't know that about LA. Does that type of work contribute to the smog at all?
I think more of the smog is just
that. Just everything else.
Everyone owns a car, and
I know. Have you guys heard anything about Elon Musk's like tunnel idea that he's trying to work out? Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
What are your thoughts on Elon Musk?
Yeah.
No. You're talking smells about him building the tunnels underneath LA, the boring company. Yeah, if he can pull it off, I think it would be awesome. There are definitely some things I'd worry about boring through some of those mountains. I don't know, I'm sure he's got a phenomenal team of scientists behind him, but LA's moving. LA's moving a lot. I mean, there was an earthquake, 2 weeks ago?
Oh my gosh, they're something all the like time. That. They've had, I think, 10 this summer. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You won't catch me in one of those pods.
Yeah, it's a...
He's out. He's Troy doesn't buy it.
I'm walking. See you there, Elon.
There's definitely places that it could be implemented, though, that I think would be better prior to LA, just for, testing purposes. But I think it's a very interesting idea, right?
No earthquakes in Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona has no natural disasters. I mean, I guess if you count haboobs or fires, but yeah. No, LA is very hilly, and I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know anything about the rock structure of LA, but I just feel like that would be so hard to pull off at the level that he wants to. So yeah, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah. Out of all of the, renewable energy sources that you're talking about, copper, wind, solar, etc. Something that I'm interested in is I want to go into real estate development and kind of build eventually sustainable home communities.
Efficient homes,
even kind of tiny home efficient style. Do you guys have any kind of suggestions for that, or just people in general who are trying to kind of move even their own house to more renewable energy sources? What's kind of the best way to start going about that?
Yeah.
Well, it all depends on location, right? So first thing is, hey, in Minnesota, you can't use solar, right?
Yeah.
But you can have access to, potentially other things like geothermal or potentially wind if you're in the right corridor.
Yeah.
But then if you're in Arizona, solar's great. Yeah. And I think the interesting thing with renewables is because for Troy and I, it's all about economics, driving innovation, right? Mm-hmm. If solar makes sense economically, then I'm all for solar, and especially areas that are off the grid, like you're saying. And so Southwest US, solar works great. If you're looking at, the mid-con, so the Midwest, for example, mm-hmm. Nebraska, all that, it's Tornado Alley, wind, that works great there. If you're close to the beach, coastal, tidal energy, right? I'm not a big fan of hydroelectric. That's a weird one for me. But as far, I like tidal, I like solar, I like wind in some cases, and then I love geothermal. But geothermal, you can only have access to that in very, very specific places. And the infrastructure to set it up it's a lot of money. But once it is set up, it's the best.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. Do you think that we've already kind of established all the options for renewable energy sources? Or do you think that we could develop more or discover more? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to change drastically with technology. So we're going to see this incredible technology boom with this. So science drives technology and business, right? Mm-hmm. So when science is moving forward and it really progresses into something new, bang, technology almost responds immediately. Business is obviously ready to respond. So when that happens in the next few years, science is going to drive this new technology growth and business and money's going to go into drastically changing things. I mean, the heat map and then our recording of where we have efficient sun energy is based on what we understand and what we need today. So that scale that you see on any map you can Google and say, where's good sun energy? That scale is based on the technology that's in the solar panels that can actually capture that and turn it into energy. Yeah. When the technology changes in that, and all of a sudden that little red spot in Arizona could be as big as all the way across Louisiana and into California and all the way up, mm-hmm. That's going to drastically change where you're thinking about building these interesting communities. Don't forget about water, whatever you do.
Water.
Definitely study the aquifers where you plan on building this community. Because with, when you have stable water, you can do all kinds of stuff. But without water, you're asking for trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and water is a real interesting one too, because and this is something that we were kind of dabbling with a little bit, but depending on what aquifer your city gets its water from, there are usually health conditions that are prevalent in those areas. So, mm-hmm. and that's due to the enrichment and specific elements within that water. So that's something that's also needs to be keep in mind. Some areas have a higher chance of cancer because their aquifers have, you know, more concentrations, like higher PPM of lead opposed to another aquifer in a different area.
And
some higher arsenic, some higher fluorine, some lithium. So that's
weird.
That's another very weird.
And it's
pretty interesting because you'll see these watershed maps, and a watershed is essentially, you know, like a drainage area for all the rivers in a specific area. And within those watersheds, when you look at all the hospitals, they're going to have an increase in a very specific, you know, type of ailment. And it's just things associated with those aquifers. And it's a very, very interesting thing.
What Skippo is saying is profound. This is something that's happening today, and we're just trying to understand and wrap our minds around it and inspire other research institutes to study this. It's going to take a collective mindset and a lot of attention and a lot of good data management to understand the implications of our water sources and these anomalies in the health system in these areas, for sure.
Yeah.
What's the best water source, do you think? Like in the U.S., like what state do you just want to?
Where could you not have any of those health ailments that could be a possibility? That's really scary. I did not know that was even.
In the U.S., I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Rainfall.
There's also things that, you know, with rain, because there are minerals within the water that your body just needs, right? So if you don't get it from the water, then you're going to have to supplement them, whether vitamins or whatever.
Yeah.
But I know the best place on earth is Iceland, without a doubt.
I mean, that makes sense.
It's not even close.
I want to go to Iceland so bad.
We're doing a podcast there next month. Are you guys in?
Oh, you're my going gosh.
No, I just wanted to see the reaction.
No, I'm super gullible.
I would have. Let's go to Iceland. No, I've been wanting to go there for so long.
I almost made it. I was in Europe this semester, and I was trying to plan a trip there to see the Northern Lights, but I got sent home early.
It just looks stunning. I've never seen anything like it, and I'm trying not to look at photos because it's so pretty.
Yeah.
It's like a geologist, it's like being on a different planet. There's nothing in the U.S. that I can say that I can compare it to.
It's a
magical place.
Wow. Is that like just the gold paradise for geologists to study and appreciate?
I'd say so. For me, that's probably my favorite place.
Got it.
I got to go back. I was there for a week and I only saw like a quarter of the island.
Wow. So much to explore.
And also like just a heads up, everything is very expensive there. Beautiful, but very expensive. Yeah.
Hard to get to too. I mean, it's not like you can just walk across. Yeah. Okay. I'll go there one day.
I do not suggest walking.
So, Troy, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the education program that you were working on. Remember we talked about that a little bit ago? Is that kind of what you're working on at the Research Institute, or what are you rolling out right now that you believe is really important for young people like ourselves or the people listening to this to take away from just these overall concepts of geology and continue to research and stay up to date on and all of that?
Yeah, I would start with saying that there's a universal feeling that we all get when we're in nature, right? When you're on a trail or you're in the beach and you're in the water, there's a universal feeling. It's not an understanding. You have to feel this. It's your connection. Mm-hmm. And that connection is incredibly powerful because what it's doing is removing the nonsense from your life. My brother's a veteran in the Air Force, and I talked him into this. I said, come on, we're going to start this research institute, dude. We're going to go for it. Let's change the world. He's like, I'm in. And obviously he knew a lot and knew the depth of this and knew that it wasn't, you know, complete chaos. But he showed up and he was not a geologist. And now I'm so proud of my brother because he's taking the initiative of actually studying these rocks and listening to these conversations and understanding that there is this whole new way of thinking of our place in nature, our place in nature, that feeling. And he says, when he goes out in Outcrop now and he takes his kids to the river bottoms and these washes, he picking up rocks. He doesn't feel the pain of the injuries. He doesn't feel anything. Awesome. Exactly. He doesn't feel anything except for that. There's something going on with nature. And I love this feeling. You can't get that any other way than get your ass out to that outcrop and have interest. Put yourself to that limit of, well, why is this rock here? What is this rock made out of? Do some research and you'll be captivated by the story of geology. So I found that out through my own experiences. But when I was in oil and gas, the owner of our company was a huge advocate of the local society. And in the local society, they said, we want to get geologists to go to fifth grade classes every year and teach geoscience for a day to the fifth graders. And I'm like, I'm in. And they're like, man, you got the personality for this. Yeah. We love this. So I did that for 5 years, every year, try to run that program and try to engage with these kids. And I was blown away on how smart a fifth grader is. Like 10 years old, these kids were talking about all kinds of stuff. Cause I always left it open-ended.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it. It's just anything is possible. Think about it. And the guy's like, how do you know the core is made out of what it's made out of if you've never been there? Like, you little 10-year-old, you gotta trust science, man. But there's a leap of faith in it all. There is a connection in it all that is unspoken. You can't teach it to somebody. You have to feel it. And when you allow yourself to do that and you get inspired by the unknown and just pushing yourself to an intellectual limit to understand the natural world, there is power there. There's a lot of excitement there, and kids need this excitement more than ever. They're not motivated through their screens and the iPads. They're taught and they understand things, but they're not motivated. And so it's our problem, because we created this by sitting a kid in front of the TV while me and mom get to have our conversation, and they get captivated by that instant gratification. But if we can teach this and we can connect the kids and we can connect veterans and we can connect people who are struggling with whatever the personal problems are that are, you know, so important, but it doesn't define you. It doesn't define where you're going in life. If you can disrupt that with something as simple as just teaching them the basics of geology, where they can become a mineral targeter, because they just have the intellectual ability to just study this and go, you know what? Why can't I find copper? I don't need a degree. Yeah. I don't need someone who's specialized to tell me how to do this. I just need an opportunity to read this and a resource. And that's the Research Institute. It's just a resource for an intellectual limit that you will not reach. It's just incredible. It's built by the giants of our industry. And I think it's going to motivate the world to get connected and to make a difference.
I love that so much. That's everything that I think education should be for kids. I mean, I luckily kind of grew up before the screens got super big. I mean, now it's a huge part of my life, and I try to limit it as much as I can. But I've seen, you know, whenever I babysit or younger family members,
they're so sucked in. It's not experience anymore. They're not going out and experiencing, which that's how we learn the most, because all of our sensory inputs are stimulated as opposed to just one looking at a screen type of thing. So I like that you encourage more exposure and actually figuring out discovery, exploration, like all those things I feel like are under, I guess, what I would perceive geology being. It's more of, it's like being curious, discovery. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and encouraging that, you know, I think a lot of kids and young people, when they're trying to get a career, it's kind of taught that you're supposed to go on this one path, you know, go to college, get a degree, and then not really even think about, okay, why am I doing this? Is this something that really makes me light up, whatever? And, you know, everyone has a different experience in the world and a different way to get there. And we're not really having that discussion. And I love the copper example that you gave. I think that kids are so much smarter and more curious than we give them. And I have so many people that I know get to college and they do some BS degree and then they graduate with no actual skill set or interest, and they just go back home because that's all they know.
Or they do have a skill set, but just not an interest or motivation, which you just said. And that's pretty much like the foundation of what you need to be able to be happy with what you're working on every single day.
Right.
Yeah. And with technology, we're moving away from like our connection with the natural world. I mean, as humans, that's the number one thing that we should have a connection with besides our peers and the other humans on the earth. It should be the actual physical place that we live and the beauties of that. And some quote that I thought that I really liked from, you know, your guys' intro podcast was just the reason why you guys like geology is because you're able to explain the beauty behind nature, which I think is really nice. And
the beauty behind nature. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Being able to explain why this is like, you appreciate the intrinsic value in nature, right? You look at that mountain, you say, wow, that's, or you're up in Yosemite and you're just like, wow, this is beautiful. But not only can you appreciate its beauty, you can explain why it's beautiful.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're a historian for the earth. That's what I feel is like, as a geologist, that's what I feel like my job is, right? All I'm doing is I'm telling you the history of the earth.
Mm-hmm. So, wow.
Do you guys have any, I think that's a really great way to end this. Do you guys
I feel so connected now.
Do you guys have any final words or, you know, thoughts of wisdom for our listeners before we kind of wrap this up? Anyone?
T-Roy?
Definitely. I mean, so this podcast is mostly listened to folks that are in business that are trying to.
I would say a mix of business-minded people, but also we have a lot of creatives, too.
We have creatives and a mixture of high school and college students and then some adults, too.
Yeah totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the concept that I'd like to get across, and it's hard for the engineers and very educated folks to get there, and it's the fact that this is stuff that's applied today. This is not just ideas and this realization that academia has driven us into this specialization and this big disruptive problem. It's more about delivering the message that if you find the right folks working with the right problems and the right technology, this business can be started tomorrow and it can start making money for everybody tomorrow. You just need to go out there and build the team and make those connections. Mm-hmm. So it's the most exciting time, I think, in history is right now.
Right now. Yeah. No, we've been talking about that a lot just with, I mean, obviously the pandemic has created a lot of issues, but it's also just like you said in the beginning, it's made a lot of people be more mindful of all of our surroundings and how we fit in this whole puzzle piece of earth and life. And I think that it's good to take a step back and really analyze, okay, what am I doing? What should I be better at? How should I be thinking about this or that? And just, growing, getting better.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. I love this. To be honest, I am so much more inspired now to just like continue researching geology because truly, like, this is a minefield. If we really wanted to pull a million questions for you guys, we could have, and you probably would have answered them flawlessly. But, like, there's just so much. It's insane. But it's awesome. I really have so much respect for what you guys are doing. And likewise. Just your passion for what you study. Like, I can really tell that you are motivated towards working towards what you're working on. And, just wanting to move forward with more knowledge, I guess, on Earth. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
That was a great ending.
Great ending, Jordan.
Drop the mic.